Yes, we are back once again. The 20-minute hit is here to bring you the big sports stories from the last 7 days, detailed breakdown and analysis in the shortest time period possible. As always, here on the show, I'm Ollie Wilson, your host, and joining me, as he does every single time we get behind the mic on this show, is Mr. Paul McDonald. He is very much the brain of the 20-minute hit. And Paul, a big week indeed in the back pages this week. Everybody talking about Adam Johnson, Peyton Manning's retirement. We had the Champions League in midweek as well. Arsenal injury hit by Hull City. But everybody is really talking about Meldonium and Maria Sharapova.
Yeah, I've just been making sure that I haven't taken any drugs on the WADA ban list, mate. Just been making sure I've been checking
check the emails, yeah. You check the emails, yeah. Good. Joining us on the show today is the Chief Content Officer of Squawker. It is a man who is making his debut appearance on the show. It's Mr. Amar Singh. Amar, pleasure to have you on the show, mate. How you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, and thanks for having me. Yeah, really looking forward to this.
Pleasure to have you on, and love to hear your thoughts as well on Maria Sharapova. That's where we're going to start, of course, the one of the leading ladies in world tennis and one of the richest sporty female athletes on the planet, failing a drugs test at the Australian Open, openly admitting it, coming out and almost beating the press to it, if you will, with her announcement in midweek. Many expecting her to announce her retirement, instead announcing that she'd been caught with Meldonium in her system, a recently banned substance on the World Anti-Doping Agency's list of banned substance. She didn't read an email that contained the list. The updated list was announced on January the 1st. This is a massive, massive screw-up from somebody in Maria Sharapova's team, a massive screw-up from either Maria Sharapova or her doctors around her. Or is this Maria Sharapova trying to flirt the lines of being a fair competitor, if you will? What are your thoughts, first and foremost, when this announcement came out earlier this week, Paul?
This absolutely stinks, Ollie. It stinks to high heaven, every single part of it. It's disgusting. I mean, what we should do at the moment, I think, is test every single athlete out there for Meldonium, because this only highlights the contempt that athletes have got for the WADA ban list. This should be stuff that's being checked on a daily basis, not only by doctors, but by athletes to make sure that they're clean. In this day and age, given everything that we're talking about in Russian doping, but also in cycling and sport in general, it's absolutely unacceptable for an athlete to fail this test, given the current climate. I just think that the excuses that she's given just don't stand up for me. And the very nature of the fact that it was on WADA's monitoring list for 12 months before actually being banned should have put it on the radar at that point, let alone at the start of 2016. I think the full situation is stinks to high heaven, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of athletes over the next few weeks come out with more failed tests.
Well, it's Meldonium's been proven to help reduce recovery times and help increase the oxygen in the blood flow. There's been discussion about some of the Kenyan athletes, long distance runners, having it as well. And it's, as I say, something that might be relevant and in place in world sport throughout every single sporting genre, if you will. But Amar, what I want to know is who do you put the blame on for this catastrophe for Sharapova? Do you put it on her herself? Because we know that she's meticulous with her preparation, with everything to do with her career on and off the court. Or do you put it on the team around her who failed to pick this up?
I think the whole thing is pathetic. And for Maria Sharapova and her entourage, and she has a huge entourage of hangers-on and people that help her get about her daily life, for them not to identify that this was on the banned list for 12 months, the whole thing is just pathetic. And, unfortunately, her excuse, the reason that she gave in her press conference, has been met with plenty of scepticism, particularly from people who've been working in sports journalism for many years and have heard stories like this time and time again. Nobody ever comes out and says, yes, I was taking it because I thought it would give me an edge. They always come out and say, oh, I was taking it for this. And, to say that you were taking a drug that's usually prescribed for 4 to 6 weeks for people with heart problems, because you were taking it over 10 years because of diabetes, and this drug was banned in the US. I mean, people aren't going to buy it. And for me, what also was pathetic, Ollie, was the fact that the WTA came out with a statement, all the gushing that's come out about Sharapova afterwards. Personally, look, I think she should have the book thrown at her. She has failed a drugs test according to the ban list. She deserves the ban that will be handed to her. But this says to me a lot more about Sharapova in terms of who she is, how she has been very cynical about marketing herself. It's always irked me over the years that she's pocketed more money than superior athletes like the Williams sisters. It's always irked me. And unfortunately, I'm not the most sympathetic person when it comes to Maria Sharapova.
It's not surprising, though, that World Tennis has stuck by her, though. I mean, Serena Williams has come out and said that Sharapova was very brave to come out and make this announcement. And it's funny, the way she presented herself at that press conference, all dressed in black, it was like a very somber, respectful atmosphere, as if she was going and attending a funeral or something like that. And I think a lot of people have kind of picked up on that who aren't involved in tennis outside the world. She is in massive damage control at the moment, and the tennis world is playing into that damage control by almost backing her.
The head of the WTA said that she was a woman of great integrity.
This is a woman, but Paulie, this is a woman who actually tried to change her name to Sharapova for the US Open in 2013. You know, she's a marketing machine, first and foremost. She's always been about media manipulation. And I covered Wimbledon for a few years, and she always struck me as someone who wasn't the most sincere. Now, I'm not saying that makes her guilty of every drug offence in the world and all of that. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that when we know what we know about her and the way she has carried herself, I take a dim view at some of these excuses that she's given.
Absolutely. And tennis had an opportunity here to lay down a marker and be stern in their assessment of the situation. And they haven't done it. And it's unacceptable, in my opinion.
The well-known Dick Pound of WADA coming out and describing it as reckless beyond belief, the Sharapova situation. Let's move away from Maria Sharapova, but stay with incidents off and away from the sporting field. Adam Johnson, his sentencing date has been announced, found guilty of 2 counts of sexual activity with a 15-year-old girl and grooming. Sentencing on the 24th of March, minimum term of 5 years in prison, perhaps could be up to 10 years. Adam Johnson said he's been abandoned by the football world. Margaret Byrne has had to step down from Sunderland's chief executive position and quit the club for her involvement in the situation that allowed Johnson to continue playing for the club. This is obviously damning for Adam Johnson, and there's no way you can say anything but that, and there's probably a lot more that people can say about Adam Johnson in this situation. But for Sunderland Football Club as well, they've really dug themselves in a hole, and I'm surprised they're not getting a harsher treatment, if you will, from the general public right now.
Yeah, that's a horrible, murky situation here for all concerned, and no one obviously comes out of it looking very well indeed, not Johnson or the club. The fact that Johnson was allowed to play for 11 months when Margaret Byrne had been told that Johnson had contacted the girl and indeed kissed her, irrespective of any guilty or non-guilty claims that he was going to make in court. At that point, he should have walked out of Sunderland and never turned back. I think the way that the club handled this has been particularly shabby. And when you look at a club like Sunderland, this is an unprecedented event in football. There's press offices that have to deal with a lot of things and a lot of extreme incidents, but something like this hasn't happened in football very often, if at all. And this has been a marker laid down by them to show how not to handle a situation like this. And as for Adam Johnson himself, he's been abandoned from football. Well, good luck to him. He can talk about that from the other side of a jail cell.
There's been a lot of discussion about the immaturity of players, and again, there's nothing to excuse what Johnson has done, but there's plenty to kind of think about of how we raise these young footballers who never really seem to grow up and take accountability for their actions, and a lot of people thinking that is part of what's led Adam Johnson to be in this situation. Yet again, I'd like to stress we're not giving him any kind of reasonable I guess discretion in this matter in any way, shape or form. But Amar, does football have to look at its system and how it treats young players coming through youth academies and how they get everything that they want? Or is it more important that football looks at the system that we've got with Sunderland at the moment, with Margaret Byrne seemingly controlling and not allowing the directors of the club to know about this in full detail, which led to Johnson being able to carry on playing?
Yeah, I think it's like you say, it's no excuse, really. And I don't think Adam Johnson can point the finger at anyone else but himself. But bigger picture, I do think that football clubs and, you know, sports organisations have a duty of care, if you like, to players. They have a obligation, if you like, to ensure that when they identify players, which they do as assets, they also understand that they have to play a role in educating these players. They have to play a role in ensuring that they are fostering and raising well-rounded individuals. I fully believe that, because too often, you know, football clubs will look at players as assets. They will say, right, you know, it's all about what they deliver for us on the pitch. It's all about what value they bring to the club, and actually turn a blind eye to everything else that they do. And the life of a footballer is, you know, training in the morning, they're sitting around for most of the afternoon, they've got not much to do, they can't really go out and hang out with their mates anymore because they're quite recognised. A lot of them get up to mischief because they don't have, you know, the right... They should be taking language lessons. They should be getting educated. They should be doing other things during this time.
It's a situation that I don't think we want to dwell on too much longer with Adam Johnson, but I think Sunderland Football Club and football in general will have to look at the process of everything, including, you know, the young players who don't have to clean the boots anymore or anything like that, and just get given plenty of money and get promised the world, if you will, from a very young age, and don't ever find that accountability and the way it's all been dealt with since 12 months ago. Let's move away from football, from perhaps the negatives, and move to the positives of world sport. Although, is world sport losing one of its greatest ever athletes? Peyton Manning finally announces his decision to retire this week on Monday, the big long press conference. I guess it was the best unkept secret in the NFL and perhaps in world sport that Manning was going to retire. I think everybody knew it was going to take place. I guess, Paul, now what we're going to start asking is, where does he rank among the top quarterbacks of all time in NFL history? And does he really deserve the number one, number two ranking that some people are already giving him?
This is a difficult one for me, Ollie, because it raises a wider question about how much we laud our sports people. And can you disassociate the man from the sportsman? I don't like Peyton Manning. I don't like his demeanour. I don't like his family. I don't like what he's been accused of and probably done over the past couple of weeks. I don't like much about the guy. But should that influence my opinion on whether he should be ranked amongst the best quarterbacks of all time? I'm conflicted on this one. I certainly don't think he's number one. I think most NFL aficionados would say that Brady's probably top, and then you're looking at guys like Joe Montana, John Elway, guys like that. I think Manning does come into the conversation for the top five, but I'm having a real issue disassociating what Manning is as a person, as a character, from his incredible achievements on the pitch, and I find it difficult as a result to rank him in the top five.
Well, I suppose it's difficult as well, particularly with that position, because it's not only about being a great player, but there's, you know, that leadership role comes into it as a quarterback. And Manning is a leader, fantastic, but as a leader, as a captain, you then have to look at the way he handles himself off and around the pitch. I know a number of people, you don't begrudge him of the endorsements, but the fact that we're going to have Peyton Manning's face everywhere, he's very much a guy that has been willing to sell out. Of course, you have the alleged incident at Tennessee of sexual assault, which I was amazed. Only one person asked a question about that at his press conference. I know it's the retirement due. It's meant to be the kind of banners and whistles and bells and going out on a big time for Peyton. But I still think, because of how when this has been brought up 2 weeks after his Super Bowl victory, there should have been more questions about that at his retirement press conference. The thing for me that frustrates me with Manning as the player on the pitch is that when you're talking about some of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, you say, look at the rings. And you look at Peyton's first Super Bowl winning ring in Indianapolis over the Bears, and he was a phenomenal quarterback, and he was incredible at Indianapolis, and he was great at Denver as well, up until perhaps the beating in the Super Bowl that he took against the Seattle Seahawks. You go to last year, and you suddenly look at one of probably the worst quarterbacks of all time to win a Super Bowl ring. And I've been talking with a few people about this week, and in the modern day kind of era, in my generation of NFL fans, the two other names that crop up are Trent Dilfer and Brad Johnson, and they were both carried to Super Bowls, really, by the Baltimore Ravens and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defenses. And that is all you can say about Peyton Manning last year. With 9 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, and an overall season rating of 67.9, one of the lowest, and lower than some of the worst years that those two other quarterbacks had, Manning, for me, that of last season, the Manning of 2016, is the worst quarterback to win a Super Bowl. And so I find it hard then to say that he's won two Super Bowls. Like, Elway won those for Denver. He had a lot of support, but Elway put his body on the line at times to win those two Super Bowl trophies. You look at Brady, you look at Montana, for instance, as well. They won by their arms and their ability to control games. And Manning didn't do that in this second one. So he's only won, for me, one Super Bowl. The second one, it's a bit of a kind of a tarnished mess, if you will, particularly then with the fallout after it. He will go down as one of the greatest. He holds so many records, Peyton Manning. You know, season touchdown record, passing career touchdowns. You name it, Manning holds it. But one of the best for me, top 10, borderline maybe not top 5 for me. Borderline maybe not top 5. Let's finish with a bit of Champions League football action. Of course, PSG, Benfica, Real Madrid and Wolfsburg booking their places into the next round of the Champions League. big, I guess, for Paris Saint-Germain last night, going to Chelsea, getting a 2-1 victory. Chelsea, though, really, you think if Diego Costa hadn't been injured, guys, should have probably done them, Amar.
Absolutely. Chelsea were looking really good before Diego Costa went off, and I think Diego Costa's goal was excellent. However, over the two legs, I thought PSG were superior. I think they've really pushed on this season, this PSG team. Di Maria has made all the difference, and I thought he was the outstanding player for PSG last night. And great to see Di Maria being the Di Maria that we all know he can be after such a dismal season at Manchester United. And also, you know, fantastic to see Zlatan Ibrahimovic really assert himself on that game. There are still people in England who still say that he's overrated, who still say that he can't do it against Premier League clubs, or the Champions League is something that's always going to elude him. So personally, very pleased to see Zlatan Ibrahimovic really assert his quality on a big game like that.
It was something peculiar in the TV broadcast last night that was mentioned about Zlatan, that he still kind of splits people's opinion of how good he actually is. And for me, anybody that I know in the kind of sports journalism industry, you mention Zlatan Ibrahimovic and people say, yeah, he's fantastic. It's only kind of the fan down the pub that doesn't seem to be kind of convinced by him as a player. Poorly, though, I guess Chelsea will look at the fact that Hazard once again didn't really show in a big game. There's been criticism about him this year, and perhaps he looks disassociated with the club. Is it just the wrong season for Chelsea this year after all that happened? And you put that down to why they've stumbled against a PSG side that, again, at times they look like they could have had and could have got three in the latter part of that first half last night.
I think it's an accumulation of factors. Just on the Hazard point, I think he looks like he would rather be somewhere else at the moment, and that's impacting his performances. But Hazard also has got history of going through really barren periods. I watched him at the World Cup when I thought he was particularly poor in all of Belgium's games, and previously at Chelsea as well, closer to when he actually joined, he went through a spell where he didn't do much on the pitch in terms of assists or goals. So I think he has got a tendency to go through spells like that. But just overall, I was just thoroughly impressed by PSG. I totally agree with Amar. I think this is a team that's actually finding itself now. It's found an authority, and Di Maria looks to be the final piece of the puzzle. And I think the Di Maria situation says more about Man United's inability to get the best out of him. Because if you look everywhere else where Di Maria has been, he's been fantastic. At Benfica, world class. At Real Madrid, he almost single-handedly took them to the Champions League win. And for Argentina, he's got a great relationship with Messi. So it was the only blot in his career is the fact that Van Gaal didn't rate him and couldn't get the best out of him. And more fool them, because I thought he was inspirational last night. And the ranking of teams that can win the Champions League, I'm putting PSG just in behind Barcelona at the moment. I think they've got more about them than Bayern currently.
Really?
To go ahead and win this.
I was going to say, I could see a discussion about Madrid being ahead of them, because Madrid didn't look great against Roma, and Roma squandering chance after chance on Tuesday night, as did Zenit last night, and eventually succumbing to Benfica, who booked their place in the next round. But ahead of Bayern, why? Because Bayern at times can play some fantastic football, as we saw in that first half, particularly against Juve. They did stumble slightly.
I think Bayern's the Pep Guardiola situation is not helping Bayern at all at the moment, and also they've got a number of injuries that means that Pep's having to change his team a lot. I watched them against Dortmund on Saturday, and I felt as if Dortmund, if they'd have really went for the jugular and went for Bayern, they could have got something out of that match and really gave us a title race in the Bundesliga. But I just think the entire club has been overshadowed by Guardiola, and the fact that he's leaving. Of course, he's a professional and wants to leave on a high and give them that Champions League they desire, but the entire attitude around the club it seems to be a strange one at the moment. And I think when you look at the fact that PSG have given Blanc an extension to his contract, they're 25 points clean in France, the league is wrapped up, they can focus all their energy and all their efforts on getting far in the Champions League. And I think if they get a favourable draw, this could be the year where they actually become a breakout side and get to a final.
Amar, what about yourself for the Champions
League? Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you look at the investment that PSG have made, which has obviously been astonishingly high, there is a seeming sort of inevitability about them. They will reach a Champions League final sooner rather than later. They will win the Champions League sooner rather than later. And it just seems like the stars are aligning this season for them. Ibrahimovic is in fine form. Di Maria has added something so good to their attack. I think Lucas Moura has really pushed on as well. In midfield, Blaise Matuidi is probably one of the most underrated players in Europe. And they've got young talents coming through like Rabiot, Verratti, who's maybe less young now, but and Thiago Silva is probably the standout centre-back in Europe as well at the moment. So there's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't be regarded in that bracket just behind Barca. The Barca, clearly exceptional team. Their front three just give them an edge over any team on any day. And I expect them to blow away Arsenal next week. But for me, yeah, PSG are really not that far behind.
I'm amazed that neither of you said Arsenal, despite all the injury problems, having picked up those big injuries against Hull in midweek for Gabriel and Ramsey. Amazed nobody still thinks they can't win a Champions League. Their season is crumbling away right now. Gentlemen, that's all we've got time for here on the show today. Amar, pleasure to have you on the show and be chatting all things world sport with you. And we look forward to hopefully having you back again at some point, mate.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
And Paul, I will catch you next week. As we will catch you next week, remember to follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at 20minute hit, at 20minute hit. Subscribe on iTunes as well and get onto Audio Boom. A big thanks for joining us this week. We'll be back in 7 days' time. Have a good one.